Hey, this is Orlando Greenhill, formerly of Javelina Rail Company. Yeah, you're listening to my chapter, As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it.
Boom.
From the Scattered Few song As the Story Grows.
The title of this podcast is taken from that Scattered Few song. Yes, I did not name this podcast. I'm not the original host of this podcast, but I do know the name of the podcast comes from that song. So yes, it is from the Scattered Few.
Yeah, that's like one of my favorite bands.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I've been a Scattered Few fan since I was a kid, and I'm funny, I know Alan and stuff too, you know, or Rommel, as people better know him as, you know. And yeah, that's like one of my favorite bands, man. Like, oh, no way, Scattered Few fan.
That's super cool. I love Scattered Few too, but yeah, I did not name this podcast, so I can't take credit for that. But yeah, that's super cool. It's awesome when people recognize that, because Alan was on the show, not while I was host, but a while back. And yeah, it's super cool when people recognize that that's where the name came from. So,
funny thing is, I met him before, like, I even joined Javelina. I was this little punk rock kid. We got an invitation from his wife for his birthday party. I don't know if it was, I think it was a surprise. I'm not sure. And, like, you know, there's so many different people in his house. Like, you know, it was me and a few goth chicks I used to kick it with back in the day in high school. And we went up there, and here I am with a shaved head and bangs and you know, like, like some jacket and boots and all that. And my friends, we all sat in the corner because we didn't know anyone. We're just kind of dressed in all black, you know, like, you know, just kind
yeah.
of, and then he comes over, hey, get something to eat. We're just like nervous because, you know, we like the music that he put out. We're like, whoa, you know. Then it's funny. I met him like, some years later. In Texas when he lived out there, and I was in actually the band Head Noise. I don't know if you ever heard of that group. They're a punk band.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was actually their original drummer, but it was funny because, wow, you know, I left that group because I was, you know, doing more stuff with Javelina, and I was in another band. I knew that they were going to be doing other stuff too, like full time. So, but he was recording their album, so I went and talked to him, and I'm like, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but, and he's like, oh yeah, you look like one of those kind of skinhead types that were, I'm like, yeah, that was me, you know, like, and it was like, yeah, dude, that was a long time ago, and yeah, we just, you know, we've been friends, like, ever since. Alan's like one of my favorite musicians, arrangers, composers, singers, you know, we're in some of the same music too, so.
That's so crazy. That's so funny. So, was that like, was Scattered Few and punk one of your influences growing up, or did you come to that a little later? Or
you mean like, oh, are you saying punk rock or just Scattered Few? Like,
both like influences.
I've been in the punk since I was like a kid. Like, seriously, like, I've been in the punk and hardcore and all that stuff since I was like a preteen. You know,
yeah.
I'm, you know, like, my sister and I used to listen to K Rock and stuff, and that was in L.A. That was the station for, like, a lot of alternative punk or new wave bands at the time when we started listening to it. It was, like, new wave and sort of punk. I heard, and we also would watch video shows like Video One, which, Richard Blade used to host, and you know, that's where I first saw actually Suicidal Tendencies. First hardcore song I ever heard was Institutionalized. And then, oh, wow. like I think I was in junior high. I was like 9 when I heard that song. But then junior high, I stumbled on the Flipside video, found out about, you know, bands like Agnostic Front. Also, Thrasher Magazine informed me about a lot of those bands too, you know, in junior high and stuff. And at that time, I was also into like a lot of what people call classic rock. I was into like a lot of progressive rock stuff too, even at an early age, like in my early teens. So I got into all that, you know, hardcore and punk stuff long before, you know, I grew up around all kinds of different music. My dad was a musician too, so, but I got into all the punk and hardcore stuff on my own, you know, like, and, you know, started embracing it even more so in, you know, my early teens too. So, you know, like it was a progression of me not only just liking the music, but actually becoming a part of that, you know, one of those millions of shaved heads in the pit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been in the punk and hardcore, all that stuff since I was a kid, you know.
That's awesome. I love hearing like people getting into it like super early and super young, because I started like I got into it young. I was probably 10 or 11 when I got into punk, and like my dad took me to shows before I could drive, and people were like, oh, people were like, you really saw that band in their heyday? And it's like, yeah. So it's awesome to hear that that's not an experience you have on your own, right? That other people got into it that young.
Yeah, it's funny. Like my dad, like, you know, I lost my father actually in February. May his memory be eternal. But he would take me to different shows. And you're going to laugh, like, even though people would probably say Undercover was not as punk, obviously, as Scattered Few, that was probably the first punk-oriented band that I saw, like, in 1984. I caught, like, the last part of their set, but I can say, like, as far as, like, you know, other bands, I mean, like, it's just, like, when me getting into the scene, per se, I don't even know if I was ever a part of a scene, but I knew just a lot of punk rockers and stuff, and death rockers or whatever. You know, as a kid, you know, like we were the people that people threw food at, you know, so maybe I was a part of the scene, but like, I don't know. Like I just had a group of friends that were all in like a lot of the same underground kind of music, you know, I mean, it could be anywhere from like post-punk to hardcore to, I liked a lot of weird avant-garde stuff back then too, you know, which was pretty much on the verge of a lot of that punk stuff, free jazz and progressive rock stuff as well. So yeah. I could say in my teens, I definitely embraced it even more, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. How'd you start playing music, man?
My dad again. My dad, you know, he was a musician. He actually was, especially like in the 70s, around the time I was born, and even before that, you know, like him and he's been in a few different groups. One of the groups that he was in was called Fistful of Soul. I wish, you know, I'd asked him if he had any demos, but he didn't have any. And this band, the backing band that they had, even went into if you look it up, they're an early 80s funk group called Kiddo. And those guys were like kind of linked with Funkadelic Parliament and stuff too. So yeah, my dad he got me in the music. I mean, it's one thing where, you know, even when he, you know, stopped doing that band, he pretty much just had music all around us, whether it be just through his record collection or having instruments around us. And he was really encouraging as far as just like whether I was in a band or not. He was always encouraging. As a matter of fact, the reason that I even play bass is because of him. I wanted to be a guitarist, but there was no guitar in the orchestra class that I went to. So my dad's like, why don't you play bass? And I'm like, bass? That thing's, you know, I'm shorter and skinnier than I am now. With a big old head, you know, like, what the heck, you know, like, how on earth, like, am I gonna play that? And when I started playing, it was like February 1988. It's been 31 years since. I even remember the first song I played on it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, what was that?
Eric Burton and the Animals, Monterey. I was into like a lot of older music than my generation, even then. You know, like I liked a lot of 60s and 70s music. But that was the first song that I ever played on it, like Eric Burton's Monterey. I don't know if you've ever heard that, you know, it's a dope song. And if you haven't, you need to hear it, because that bass line is on mad. It's so cool. But yeah, like that's how I got into music. I mean, I pretty much had it all around me. You know, my dad used to, you know, be jamming with his friends at the park, and I realized, even when I was older, that's where it started. I wanted to do that, you know, like, and yeah, that cultivation led me into playing and also being a music teacher, which is what I do right now. I have a few different jobs, but that's one of them.
That's super cool, man. So bass was your first instrument. Was it easy for you? Cause I know I picked up a bass at one point and I was a guitar player who transitioned to drummer. And then I picked up a bass and I was like, I don't think I like that. And then later in life I played bass and I was like, oh no, this is awesome. Did you take to it immediately?
The funny thing is my first instrument was actually a Casio synthesizer, which I'm not a pianist. My dad had that around and, you know, we're just playing around with it and that was cool, you know, but the one that I got as far as focused on was the clarinet first, which I wish that I never quit playing, and the violin. And my dad, you know, taught me a few chords on the guitar. I wanted to, you know, Jimi Hendrix was another reason I got into just wanting to play the guitar too. But bass is the one that I took to even more than anything else. And it's probably my main instrument. My second main instrument is drums, which I taught myself. And I have a bunch of different projects where I actually do play drums on. That's what I played in Head Noise, actually, too. You know, and was in a grind band called Fly Swatter with one of the guys, the older members of the New Orleans band Flesh Parade, Dewan Peters. or Dewan Marcel, that's what he went by in the band.
Oh, man. So you mentioned you're in Head Noise. What was your progression of bands like? I imagine you played in high school, right?
Yeah, Head Noise was very brief. They actually, like, I was their first drummer. We used to even practice in the garage at my parents' house back when they started in probably the mid-90s. But my progression as far as bands, even before Javelina, I was in a few garage bands. My very first band was with this renowned djembe player. Now he's a renowned djembe player by the name of Ryan Kamara. His real name was Ryan Rizzo. Well, I won't say real name, I'll say former name. And the funniest thing that we did, those guys were actually into like all that hair metal stuff. At the time I was into prog rock and punk, and I, you know, like they kind of would clown me about it. You know, we did a Metallica cover for Whom the Bell Tolls, for one of the guys' assignments and added our own ending to it. So that was that. Then I formed my own band, which was like a punk band, called World Reject. The drummer was all into that hair metal stuff too, which, you know, me and the guitarist weren't. We were in the bands like King Crimson, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and the Dead Kennedys. So, me and prog punk, you know, that was always something that I've always dug on doing, you know, mixing those two genres or whatever. But yeah, like then, you know, I've been in a few different other groups that were kind of experimental, like a group called Alien. These are all groups that are not known, you know, they never really released anything. And then, you know, Javelina, but I also have a bunch of my other projects that I haven't released, from that time too, from at least the mid to late 90s that I have a bunch of like solo stuff. And I'm also working on an EP. But Javelina was probably the first group that I got in that most people probably know. Create was another one. Homemade Gravy was another one. And I played with a few different people like Yoshida Tatsuya from Ruins, if you know who that band is. Who else? The Deadbeats. They're like an old L.A. punk band from the 70s. I played with them in 07. I played with in the L.A. Free Music Society. The band Create is actually the band that I started doing the music programs with too. We were kind of like, I guess people would call it music activism, I don't know, but we didn't just want to just play music. We just wanted to, you know, play music, but also like do things in our community. So yeah, that's kind of a brief summary. I've done a bunch of different things, to be honest, you know, and I still perform as a solo artist occasionally too. So
yeah. So Javelina is what people most know you from, and you and Matt are basically the bedrock members of that band for, I mean, most of its existence. How did you hook up with Matt and Javelina?
Through my friend Cheryl Hecht, who used to be in the Halo Friendlies. I think I met Matt and Mark Cole at a Breakfast with Amy concert. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that band, but they were
oh, yeah.
They're a good band. I've seen that band a bunch of times. Kind of a funny, like, art, like, I don't know how to describe Breakfast with Amy. They were a good band, live and on tape. Especially their live shows were something else. But Chris Colbert, David Cobble. I forgot all the other members, but those are the two guys that they're the ones I remember. You know, good guys too, really cool people. You know, like, how can I remember the guy that I always used to talk to besides Dave? He's a redhead brother. What's his name? I forgot his name. I feel bad.
Oh man, I don't remember either. Yeah.
But what was that? Oh my gosh. So these guys, you know, one of them has a hat, and this other guy's in kind of like these like kind of, it looks like a jumpsuit that he had on. The guy in the hat was Matt. The other guy was Mark Cole. So they, I don't know how, like, we even started talking. I had no eyebrows at the time, too, because, you know, that was the punk rock thing, you know, at the time. You know, yeah. But I forget, like, even how we even started talking, you know, like, and I guess we exchanged information, and then I lost their information, and they lost mine. And through Cheryl Heck, who used to play with the Halo Friendlies, too, she actually somehow... I don't know how that even happened. She knew him and got us back, you know, in touch with each other. And, you know, that's what, you know, ever since then, you know, it was like 90, because that was 92 when we met. But then the year after that is when Cheryl, you know, Cheryl also is the sister of the rapper Tapwater. I don't know if you know who he is. I think he was even on, like, was he on the Focus album? He was a rapper back in the day. I think he's a lawyer now, but I went to high school with Cheryl and him, so we were more friends, if anything. Like I knew them before I even knew Matt and Mark. So that's how we, like, that's how I remember meeting those guys, you know, like, just at least Matt and Mark Cole at the time. And then I joined them in, like, a year later. I think I saw one show of theirs, thought it was cool, got a demo tape. Then, you know, I guess the rest is history. Like,
yeah,
they asked me to join their band, you know, like, so that's what happened.
I don't, were you around when they signed to Tooth and Nail, and do you have any recollection of how Javelina signed to Tooth and Nail? Because it, Javelina just seems like a band that's so outside of what they were doing at the time and what they continued to do throughout the years.
I was around during that whole period. Like, I was pretty much their main bass player. They had a bass player, okay, before me, who's on the demo stuff. His name is Ray, Ray Bullard? Really good guy, nice guy, very cool. I haven't seen him in years, but I was on the first Tooth and Nail album to, you know, even the last album that they put out, and the unreleased album that they had out too. Or didn't really release. I guess they released it on their website before they broke up. But I forgot how. I seriously, somebody recommended us to Brandon. I hate when I forget stuff like this. It's on the tip of my head. I don't know if it was Mark Solomon. I don't know if it was somebody, and it's killing me, dude. Like, dang it, how could I forget who that was? And I'm sorry if you know who it is, and if you are that person, please forgive me. Because I know it was someone that recommended Brandon would sign us. And yeah, we
it
didn't sound like anyone.
It was a long fucking time ago, man, so.
Yeah.
it's been a minute, so it's cool.
Yeah, it was ages ago, man. Matt would probably know that question more than I would, to be honest. But I recall him like, oh my gosh, I recall him mentioning the person, and I forgot who it was. I hate when I forget people's names, because, you know, I like giving people props, you know, for that. But
sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been on since the beginning of, I mean, I was there when, you know, we signed the Tooth and Nail and all that stuff too. So.
What was, because it sounds like you knew about Christian music and the Christian scene before Tooth and Nail with Undercover and Scattered Few. What was the scene like when you guys signed and were on Tooth and Nail, and what was the reception like to Javelina? Because you guys were so outside the box and different from what was happening.
Well, the thing is, I think Tooth and Nail as a whole, to be honest, just from what I saw and remember, was a game changer. You know, like it was mostly like a lot of before Tooth and Nail, and even lesser knowns like Blonde Vinyl. It seemed like a lot of the Christian, you know, scene was more of an enclave. Yeah, you had a few groups that were outside of that scene, like The Alarm and U2. You know, those they were artists that were Christians but played, you know, they weren't labeled as Christian artists, you know, like in that regard. But I would say, like, it wasn't, how can I say it? It was very different, you know, as far as like just that whole environment coming from just being, oh yeah, this is like an underground thing with bands like Undercover, and it's just Christians playing the Christians or whatever and using sort of preachy like lyrics, which is why I even think Scattered Few stood out. They weren't really that preachy and basic when it came to lyrics as far as being Christian. And they weren't the only bands to do that too. I also liked a lot of death metal bands, you know, bands that were into that as well. But I think with Tooth and Nail, it was a whole game changer. Man, the question's loaded because they weren't really just focused on the Christian subculture. Yeah, they were a part of it, but I think as you see now, they were more kind of let's bring all of these alternative, you know, bands together, but at the same time, you know, not just limit it towards the Christian audience. I don't know. I feel like I'm saying the wrong thing, to be honest. And I'm not saying that all Christian bands before that thought that, you know. I hope you understand what I'm saying. It just seemed like more of, like, some of the bands that were out were more of a church thing. Tooth and Nail was like, okay, you know, this is not just the church thing where we're just playing church shows. We're playing clubs, we're playing skate parks, we're playing everywhere. And I don't want to generalize too much, but Tooth and Nail was definitely a game changer. As far as Javelina goes, I think a lot of us in the band just wanted to just do our own thing. You know, we didn't care about labels. I mean, people tried to market us as a swing band, and it's no insult to them. You know, that's their thing. You know, I'm not hating or anything like that. But we didn't want to fit into any of that. We were not squirrel nut zippers. We were not the Cherry Pop and Daddies or any of these other bands. That swing craze at the time was really big. That's kind of what a lot of people even latched on to us when we came out. But when we did Diamond and the Fish, it was different. When we did Russian Lullabies, it was like, whoa, these guys are really different. You know, like, it's a band, you know, we did America that was different from Russian Lullabies. All the albums are like night and day, but you could still tell it was one cohesive sound, you know, like, we just didn't care. We just did our own thing. We had to just do our own honest music when it came to just, you know, we're all different people, you know, like the guys in the band all have different influence. I tend to be the more extreme one when it came to my influences, but we made all that stuff fit, you know? I hope that answers your question. I tried to. I tend to be very analytical when it comes to answering questions.
No, yeah, but it's my wife is the same way, so it's fine. I mean, that sums it up, because Javelina is one of those bands where the things that stick out in my mind outside of like album to album, like when I think of Javelina, I think of a live band. I think of Matt's voice and your persona live, because you seem to have this extreme, like, you were the personality live and it was Matt's voice, and something about it just gelled so well. And I don't know how that played between everybody, but that was my perspective as an outsider. I guess my question was really like, if you had a perspective of how people absorbed your music at the time, because like, the self-titled record was, had this swing rockabilly thing, and Diamond and the Fish was more jazzy, and Russian, like, your whole discography is a swing that didn't fit into anything that was happening in quote-unquote Christian music at the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing with us. I mean, we just felt like our faith is our faith no matter what music we play. And I mean, a lot of Christians, I'm going to say American Christians more so, because that's a whole nother subject when we talk about Christianity.
Right.
And when you talk about the subcultures, you know, like, some people, I mean, it's like, okay, there's a lot of different Christians that play so many different kinds of music. I mean, you have a band like Crimson Thorn versus Amy Grant. I mean, like, that's two different kinds of music. It's still, they're still Christians, but it's two different kinds of music. So for us, it's just like, well, heck, we have our faith. We know what we believe. Anyone that talks to us, hopefully we'll see the example of what we believe, but we're going to play whatever we want to. We don't care. And our fans were very dedicated. We have some really cool fans. They've always been loyal and dedicated when it came to just, no matter what we did, they were cool with it, because it was just like, they kind of, even if they didn't get it, they just didn't, it was more like they really appreciated us because of just us being us. I don't even know how to answer it, to be honest, you know, like, and for us, you know, whether you were a Christian or not, like, if you dug it, you know, thank you, you know, like, that was our whole thing.
What led you guys to doing your own label and being on Jackson Rubio? Like that Tooth and Nail to Jackson Rubio back to Tooth and Nail thing. What was that
I'll
situation?
I'll be honest,
just...
like, that question I would leave more for Matt if you ever talk to him, you know?
Okay.
Because I think he can answer that better than I can. Either way, like, me as a musician, I would say, like, I don't feel like I could answer that, like, just, but coming from a musical standpoint, whenever you own your own thing, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to pay attention to what certain people, and I'm not hating when I say this, I have to clarify that, because I know it's business too, you know. You can do your own thing instead of trying to be something that someone's trying to market, which we never did. That's the thing. We never did that. And I just felt like maybe that was something that, you know, Matt started that Jackson Rubio label, and that's all, and he has a whole story on that name and where it came from. I think it's best to even talk to him. But as far as, like, just, again, you have a lot of autonomy when you have your own thing going. You could market your own self, you know, like, any way that you want, and it's your thing. You don't have to, you know, cater to a label. And like, I know it's business, and I'm not necessarily hating on that, you know, like, but when you're doing your own thing, it's your own business, and you can do as you see fit to do what you want to do. And then, you know, going back to Tooth and Nail is another thing. I mean, they helped us out, you know, by putting out did they put out America? It's so bad. Like, no, they put out Space Love and Bullfighting. I'm getting old. I'm forgetting stuff now. But you know, they backed us in putting that out, and that's pretty cool that they did that. You know, like, and I'm glad that Brandon, you know, even signed us, because, you know, if it wasn't for him, a lot of people probably wouldn't know about us. I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, Matt, I think, is better at answering that question. I mean, I can only answer it so much.
Sure. So I don't know if this is something you want to talk about, but you mentioned this to me, that you had left Javelina before the band officially disbanded and you want to go back. Is that something you want to talk about, why you left?
For me, it's just about, like, getting my own music out and just my own creative endeavors. Like, I couldn't do that in Javelina. Yeah, I expressed whenever I wanted to. When it came to just me playing, that's, you know, my, you know, the way that I played is how I played and how I express myself. But I have a lot of different ideas. Some of them I've already done. Some of them I haven't even released yet. So that's kind of where that is. Plus, you know, one of the other reasons I left too was because I wanted, you know, I'm doing a lot of stuff with the band Create and what we were doing educationally, but that ended up just being stuff on my own that I ended up doing, which that's what I've been up to. You know, I've been working at this community center. I invented a game that introduces kids to, I'm sorry, not just kids, but everyone to music. And being a music improvisation person that I am too, I use that in order to teach. So I've been doing that since I even left Javelina too. You know, that was one of a few reasons why I left. And I just don't, for me, like, I'd rather focus on my own music. I don't want to necessarily join anybody's band at this point but my own. you know, at this point in the present. So that's where I am. And especially if, like, it seems like you, I'm going to quote Howard Devoto from one of my favorite bands, Magazine. The reason he formed Magazine is because he felt like he had to scream to be heard at times. And reading that, I understood exactly what he meant. So it's like, you know, like, I just, you know, that's what I've been doing, you know, like just working on my own music, working in schools and parks and wherever else with the programs that I've had a hand in doing with mostly kids, and just, you know, occasionally playing with different groups, mostly improv groups, because I don't have to commit to that. I can just go on stage and make stuff up. You know, like with the exception of a few different groups like Bridge Feltis, that was more focused. She's like an amazing progressive pop singer. Her, you know, the Dead Beats, like my friend's cousin was in that band, is that band pretty much. They did that song Kill the Hippies back in the 70s. And how I met them was through my friend's cousin. How I met them was through a friend of mine, one of the guys' his cousin in that band. So that was only one show. I played for a few other different groups too, occasionally, but it's not something for me. Like, I don't want to commit to any group. That you would, it would have to be a really, like, I would have to be very interested in doing so and doing that. But yeah, like, I'm more committed to my own music, which, you know, I can play a few different instruments and have gotten people to play them, you know, the songs whenever I play it live. So that's cool.
Yeah. Do you have any recorded stuff you've done?
I'm working on an EP. I have some recorded stuff online, like mostly on SoundCloud. But I have an EP that I've been working on for a while. And I have like a ton of stuff that even when I was in Javelina that I did that I never released, which I just talked to a friend about, like trying to digitize that stuff because it's all 4-track stuff. It's all over the place, you know, progressive rock, weird sort of poetry type stuff, psychedelic sounding stuff. Like, it's all over the place, literally. Even some weird 60s sounding soul stuff, you know. Punk rock stuff, grindcore, all that. My dad was even in one of my call it a joke band. They're called Millions of Shaved Heads, aka Mosh, and my dad played keys in that band. It's all improv, thrash, jazz core, noise core punk. It was funny though, like it was like our crazy hardcore thrash punk band. All the songs are under like a minute.
That's amazing. Millions of Shaved Heads as Mosh. That's an amazing band name. I love that.
It's still, you know, we play, you know, we haven't played in a while, but yeah, my dad was a part of that, you know, and we've had, it's been a revolving door, but we've scared the living snot out of people.
That's amazing. So, one of the things I'm curious about, because you mentioned it in our conversations on Facebook and because we recently had, Chris Foley on this show, how'd you get involved or get converted to, or these are all terrible wordings for it, but how did you get involved in Orthodox Christianity?
Funny thing is, that's even a long story, but I'll try to make it short. I've talked to Father Foley a few times, you know. I'm like, man, you know, I think I'd met him and Lee a few times back in the day, you know, when we were at like festivals, but I never really talked to them, but it's a trip to meet like other Orthodox converts from that. How I got into Orthodoxy, man, let me see where I could even start. It actually started when I was even in Javelina, you know, like in the late 90s. I was just, you know, you have a bunch of friends that question you, you know, in college. You know, I know people from everywhere, all kinds of walks of life. I mean, especially like when it comes to, you know, Black American people, you know, like a lot of us, you know, have been through a lot of things when it comes to religion in America, especially Christianity. So I've, you know, I've had friends from the Nation of Islam, 5%ers, and you know, and then you have like just other cats too that were like either atheist or agnostics, and even, you know, people that were into the occult. I have friends from everywhere. So they started challenging me, and I, you know, at the time I was just not necessarily questioning God, but I was just like, Lord, you know, you want people to know about you. What's the deal? And God pretty much put it on me, dude, like when it came to, you know, asking those questions. And basically it was cool to know, like he was saying, you're at a, here's the place. This is exactly where I want you to be. You don't know everything. I know everything, you know, in a nutshell. And then, you know, me questioning certain things, and God just kind of like showed me and guided me through all that, you know. And through, that's a whole long story, but that's how I ended up going into Orthodoxy, you know, like, and just a long, as a long story short, even though like I considered it, it took me at least about 10 years before I really considered it. And 3 years after that, that I ended up converting. It's a long detailed story, but I'll just say that God himself drew me to that, you know, like he drew me to himself through that. So it's like, that's, yeah, you know, I'm this Black American punk rocker in an Ethiopian Orthodox church. Yeah, kind of odd, ain't it?
it's just funny because, yeah, when I talked to Chris and I talked about him going into Orthodoxy, and he was like, yeah, you know, he basically talked about being in that place of like so many bands who leave the faith, and he's like, Orthodoxy basically saved his faith. And I was, it sounds like it was something not similar, but in a kind of parallel way for you.
Yeah, it's a trip. I mean, like for me, it was just like, okay, Lord, you know, because my parents, I mean, I even give them mad props for that. They're not Orthodox in that, in the sense of that maybe I'm not in, but they're the ones that cultivated me, and they're believers, you know, like they love the Lord to the point where they raised, you know, 4 kids the best way that they could, and learning along the way, and that to me is a testament of, you know, our faith as well, and just trying to be the best person in that regard, you know. And I think that was just a step to that, you know, like just questioning where I was, because, you know, I wanted people to know about the Most High, you know, and just, you know, and not have this thing where they think it's just a white man's religion or something like oppressive, which I believe that even in our Western Christian faith, there's some examples of that. And unfortunately, a lot of, that even with those good examples, there's a lot of negative examples and why people are even leaving the faith with that too. But my thing is now, you know, like I can't just demonize, you know, all Western Christians because I was one, you know, and it doesn't mean that I'm better than anyone because I now have something that's more, not just older, but like I could actually tangibly like understand the Bible better even through that tradition. And I don't look down on tradition like I used to, you know, I don't. I understand that there's a reason for all that. And anything can become a tradition, but there's a difference between Orthodoxy and Protestantism and even Catholicism. And I think even if you don't convert to Orthodoxy, I think you should at least learn about it and just the history of our faith as Christians. It'll help you no matter where you are, you know? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. strong for every intention that ever went wrong, for short and for long, and your love. My intentions are gold, now they're growing so old, and I've nothing to hold but your love. An old tattoo, shag rug, and a recipe for soup.
For me, I just feel like, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to even share something like that. You know, like, that's one of the reasons that I even became a music instructor. You know, I'm surprised that I fell into something like that, but it just kind of showed me, like, I could use that, you know, in order to help people, you know, as much as I can. You know, like, yeah. I'm surprised that I even am doing it, to be honest. I never thought that I would be doing anything like this. And what I've seen from it is actually, you know, it encourages me, not just because I had a hand in it, but because of what people are doing with it, you know, and yeah. seeing their hand and what they're doing and how God is working, and not just me, you know, like, is how the Most High is working, and also how the other people are working that have actually benefited from that. And it's like, I don't think of myself highly enough in that sense, but God is like looking like, saying, hey, this is something that you had a hand in. But at the same time, I don't have to dwell there. I have to just get better at what I'm doing, you know? So it's like, I feel like, Neely Fuller, I don't know if you know who he is, but mm-hmm. I always quote him. He says, I'm always learning, and that's the way I feel, you know, when it comes to even me doing what I'm doing now. You know, I feel like I'm not, I feel like I'm not just on some plateau, like I'm still climbing up the ladder, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned your dad recently. Like, my dad passed away a month and a half ago. And I just, like, how much of an impact he had on me, and, like, how much of my, like, my love for music and my passion for music came from him just encouraging that in me. And it's just, like, to get to talk to people who I saw live and who I love, and it's, like, it feels like, you know, acting out of, like, what he instilled in me to, like, follow your passions, right? So it's great to talk to people who you got to see live and appreciated their music. And, like, it's been great talking to, like, all the old Tooth and Nail artists, to just, like, I feel like the history of the scene is getting lost, and it feels good to know, like, you're capturing a history that's forgotten, right?
Yeah, that's cool. Like, whenever, that's one thing I regret. Even, like, me and my dad would always talk about, like, things that he was involved in, but I wish that I could have actually recorded some of our conversations and videoed that too, you know, like, cause
yeah.
that in itself would have been, you know, a bunch of history. I could remember conversations, but just to have him, just, you know, I regret not narrating or recording things that he, you know, talked about being involved in, and just his whole take on music. And just, he was encouraging, man. Like, we would always talk about, you know, like, even performing, you know, like, I was doing karaoke, and I'm like, man, you know, people might clown, but I don't care, you know. Like, he's like, yeah, it's in you, you know, you can't just, like, go to work and come home. It's in you to get out there and just rock, you know, like, and perform, yeah. or whatever, you know, like, yeah, my dad passed on, you know, about a month and a half ago too, about February 5th. Yeah. So, yeah, man, memory eternal to your dad as well, man. That's a heavy thing, man. I'm sorry for your loss.
You too, man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a trip. My dad taught me a lot, you know, like, definitely a stand up person, you know, like, if I ever become a dad, I could only hope to be half of what he is. Or was, you know, may his memory be eternal.
The bullfighter had come to town.
summertime he'd been laid down. The bull had took his winning crown and left him lying on the ground. His wife and children hung their heads.
So I have to ask you a question. Who are your favorite bands coming up, man? Like just, and like just like hardcore and all that stuff.
Oh man, like early in the days, like when I first got into music, and I love Strong Arm. They were one of the first like hardcore bands I heard. I love Strong Arm, and then like learning about hardcore, and then I grew up in DC, so then like very quickly I learned about Fugazi and Minor Threat and Bad Brains, and so like that whole DC scene consumed me, and I was like all about that. And then like the Tooth and Nail scene back in like the mid to early 90s, and then like the DC scene, that was everything to me. Yeah, and then I happened to see yeah, my dad took me to see NIV and Agnostic Front were on tour together, and I saw
like,
this whole hardcore scene opened up, and I was like, oh my gosh. And
yeah, that's gotta like, be mad monsters. Like NIV yeah, and Agnostic Front, man, that's some straight up super hardcore. Right
there. Oh, I know. And I remember my dad being like, maybe don't get into Agnostic Front so much, and it was like too late at that point, and it opened up the whole New York scene and like Gorilla Biscuits and Youth for Today and like that whole scene. And yeah, and then I discovered emo, and like that was a whole other thing, like Sunday. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I remember somebody like I forgot who it was that told me emotional hardcore. I'm like, what the hell is emotional hardcore? Isn't it emotional enough as it is? You know,
yeah.
I was into what people might call power violence, you know, like I thought it was just hardcore grind or whatever, but I was into that stuff back in the early 90s, you know, like, and even, you know, when I was in Hathaway, I think I even tried to, like, finagle them to, like, play some Despise You or something like that. But they,
oh, my gosh.
So, like, yeah, like, I mean, that was kind of, even though that there was, you know, I actually had a project that I passed around. And I didn't even know about the term power violence till later. You know, I just thought it was hardcore, just grind or thrash or whatever. And I had a project called Disturbulence. I actually passed the tape around, a few tapes around, and for the longest, I didn't go by any, like, name or anything. Like, people didn't know it was me. But I passed it around, and a few people got it. You know, like, if you Google that name, you'll find it under some, like, some Christian grindcore type. I wish I could freaking find like the tape that I originally put out. Like one of my friends, he was in this band called Arrakis. He still has his, so I'm so glad that somebody has that. You know, like because that's a rarity. I have it on 4-track, but I gotta do it again. You know, as far as like just like not record it, but like what do you call it, remaster it and put it out. But yeah, I guess some people were calling that stuff power violence too. I was like, man, that's just like the shorter hardcore stuff that I was listening to, and imagine that mixed with some kind of Hawkwind like psychedelic type stuff, because I'm into like a lot of 60s and 70s stuff too. Like one of the guys from the Spaz was saying, like, I played him some newer stuff that he's all, man, it sounds like some freaking Moondog meets Grind, you know, Moondog with some weird jazz dude, you know. I was laughing,
oh, man.
Like,
so great.
So that's cool, you know, like, yeah, I'm, DC was like that mecca freaking, like, hardcore thing. Even though the power violence thing was an LA thing, you know, I didn't know about that because there are bands like Citizens Arrest in New York that still played like that, you know, like, it was all hardcore to me, you know?
yeah, no, I remember, like, you would just, like, see Ian McKay downtown, or, like, I told a story on Billy Power's podcast, I was guest on his show, of, like, the Evens were playing, and, like, I went to Whole Foods before the Evens played, and, like, literally, like, bumped into, Henry Rollins. and like literally bumped into him like at Whole Foods. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Robbins. Like,
that's a trip. Dude, it's funny. So you mentioned bumping into some punk rockers at Whole Foods. You're going to laugh when I tell you who I've met at Whole Foods. Dude, I met Nick Cave at Whole Foods, and actually I thought he was a lot nicer than I expected him to be. Like, I thought he was going to be this grumpy dude, but he was, like, really chipper and just, like, really friendly. I'm like, what?
Henry Rollins was much shorter than I thought he would be.
Oh, you got, how short is that cat, man?
I don't know how to, but I'm 6 foot, but he was shorter than me, so I think he's, like, 5'7", 5'8", but, like, he was definitely shorter than me, and I was like, but it's still, you're like, oh my god, it's Henry Rollins, so you're just, the intimidation factor is still there, right? Like,
I saw Greg Ginn in Long Beach just chilling at this Mexican restaurant downtown that I used to go to. I'm like, no way, dude. But, you know, those guys are from, like, Southern California, like, kind of near, you know, Hermosa, like, and, you know, like, some of those guys. I think Henry Rollins still lives out here. I'm not sure. I know he's originally from D.C., but that was just funny when I saw him. He was just chilling out, man. Like, oh, what's up? Do you know the guys in Mercury Radio Theater?
No. I do not know the main guys in Mercury. A friend of mine from the DC area played drums with them for a minute, and I knew them through proxy. But since moving here, I like Scott Hatch from Burnt Toast Vinyl. He owns a brewery.
Dude, like, tell Scott I said hi. That's the homie right there, dude. That is one of my freaking East Coast homies, man. Scott is good people, man. I saw Hatch when he came out. He came to visit, man, and like we had lunch, man. That brother is cool.
Yeah, he has a brewery like less than half a mile from my house, so I always go hang out with him. Yeah, Hatch and the guys in Me Without You. And yeah, Philadelphia is a hot spot right now, so it's awesome.
Yeah, man. Philly's got some, I mean, even like some of the earlier punk bands from Philly, like some of my favorites, like the band Pure Hell, they're the all black punk band that a lot of people are kind of like sleeping on. Like, Death actually was a few years older, but Pure Hell was around back then, and they had, they played with like the freaking Pistols and the New York Dolls and all these different bands. I talked to the bass player occasionally online too. He's a really cool guy. They're from Philly. One of my other favorite bands, my friend Jim was in a group called the Stickmen back then. They were really crazy, like funk punk, no wave, like just crazy sounding band, man. A lot of great Philly bands. I mean, Autistic Behavior, what's the name of that one band? The Heathens. Freaking,
yeah.
Lot of great Philly bands, man. Like, Why Die? Of course, I mentioned Pure Hell. Like, man, Philly had it going on, dude. Like, and of course, Mercury is dope. Dead Milkman, of course.
yeah, Dead Milkman. And then now it's like Tiger's Jaw and, oh man, there's a whole bunch, Japanese Breakfast, Catania. There's like a whole bunch of bands from Philly that are just like blowing up in like the emo revival and indie rock scene right now. It's crazy.
Philly holding it down. I should have you meet Lenny Still from Pure Hell, man. I wonder if he'll do an interview. He's I think he still lives in Philly.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. This show is like, you just meet certain people who are like, yeah, I had Neil Samoy from Staves Acre and Stairwell on the show, and he introduced me to Jeff. Yeah, Neil introduced me to Jeff, and Jeff introduced me to you. Jeff has been like huge. Jeff got Tim Mann from Focus on the show, and he got you on the show. And it's like this whole thing where it's like, I asked Neil to come on, and it's opened up this whole world.
I haven't seen Neil since like Tower Records in Long Beach, like back in the day, dude. I think I spoke to him a few times, but I haven't seen Neil in a while. I got to hit him up. I know I'm friends with him on Facebook, but it's been a while since we've seen each other in person, and Tower Records is not even around anymore.
No, it's not.
Man, Neil's good people, too. A lot of times we kind of, because some people in the media, they get our stuff wrong when it comes to, like, having interviews and stuff, but
right.
I totally understand, you know, and, you know, like, but you don't seem like the type, so, like, I'll tell him, I'll let him know, like, hey, this cat's cool.
No, we do. I just want the history from the horse's mouth, and I feel like so many of these bands have been kind of lost in the shuffle over these years, and it's like a scene that's being forgotten. And I'm like, somebody needs to just capture the history in like a documentary of like, it's like, I feel like that time in history and like the Christian scene, whatever it was at the time, is gone and doesn't exist anymore. And I'm like, this is important music and good bands. And I feel like,
what do you feel is the thing that's being lost the most, if you don't mind me asking? Not to say that I'm interviewing you, I'm not trying to take your position, but I have to ask that.
No. I just think the history is like, I feel like they're the records that people like, but nobody knows the history behind that. Or I feel like in talking to like Tim Mann and Jason Stinson and Jeff, like, you find out like the history and what the scene was like at the time, especially for the hardcore, where it's like it was so new and fresh at the time. And even like Javelina, like, it was such a weird for the scene that was Christian music and Tooth and Nail. Part of it I just think is like, people love these bands but don't know the history behind the bands, or people forget about the bands. Like, I feel like Javelina's an easy band to forget just because you're just like, oh yeah, they were on Tooth and Nail and they put out good records, but you don't remember them. Or like, you know, Tooth and Nail's put out so much hardcore that you forget about Focused or whatever, right? Like, it's so easy to forget.
I think a lot of it, especially now, like, I don't know if bands still do it. Like, there are probably more church shows that a lot of those bands played back then. But keep in mind also, and I wouldn't be surprised if Alan would have said this. He definitely was even more into that earlier than I was. You right. get bands that were demonized for either being, you know, what certain secular artists might be as far as like being punk or metal or anything, and not, you know, or they don't preach or whatever, and people kind of demonize them for that. I remember an incident where even, you know, poor MXPX, which I'm so happy for their success, but you had a bunch of kids that were whining about them, you know, playing secular shows. It's like, wait a minute, dude, are you serious? Like, God, like, gave them the opportunity to do that. Like, how dare you? You know, you know, like, and they're doing this on MTV and stuff like that. It's just like, okay, you're really making a lot of Christians marginal, dude, and it's not supposed to even be like that, you know, like, just, so, I think a lot of it, it's definitely different, you know, like, I don't know if the cats still do church shows, but mainly a lot of Christian artists played that. But even back then, like, you had people that were criticizing, you know, like, a lot of Christian alternative groups because they didn't either preach or they had a radical sound. You know, Christians were criticizing them too, you know, unless they were actually kind of like us, like, kind of alternative and all that, you know, or just, I use the term alternative that is just to mean different, not necessarily just music per se, but just
broad brush,
you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like even when I was younger, it was a minority of people that I even met that were Christian and punk or goth or anything like that. And we all kind of like, we all became friends, and we're, a lot of us are still friends to this day. You know, we look a little bit different, but, you know, like, I've met some of my really good friends from that, you know, because there weren't too many of us, you know, like, it was just, you know, like, how many, like, Christian punk rockers did you know that, you know, most of my friends that were punk were either atheist or agnostic or into the occult, you know, like...
Right, and if you found somebody that looked like you and spoke the same language as you, you gravitated toward them, and it's like, you wish, it seems like in talking to people, like, the wish and the goal was to just, like, be accepted as the mainstream, especially with, like, the hardcore bands. It's like, you had Hare Krishna bands and vegan bands and straight edge bands, and it's like, why can't we speak about Christianity in the same way? But it was like, treated as different, even though it was like the whole scene was built on preaching your beliefs, whatever that was.
It's very, like, how could I say it, when it comes to, like, just as far as, like, just it's a different message, you know. It's not like anybody else. But then, unfortunately, you had a lot of people that were kind of like, I don't know, like, a lot of, you know, we understood that many, many punks were not cool with Christianity because they were judged by, like, a lot of Christians. And plus, just what a lot of these, the whole Reagan-era Christian, you know, Christianese thing was about. And a lot of punks were not down with that. And seriously, I understand why. You know, like, a lot of that stuff was, I would call it demonic, you know, like, I don't care. You know, you call yourself the moral majority. You're calling yourself the moral majority, but at the same time, you're funding the Contras. You know what I'm saying? Like, evil stuff like that. You know, and just, you're looking down on people, but yet you're, you know, spending riches and stuff. I mean, like, you know, I think I sound a bit judgmental, but at the same time, you know, like, a lot of punks was criticizing that. You know, like, they criticized a lot of that because it was just hypocritical. You know, like, it was just like, man. You know, and so you have the backlash. So whenever somebody says that, oh, we're Christians, and like I've had people tell me back in the day, how could you be a Christian and be a punk? That's totally contradictory. You know, well, punk really has no rules, really. I mean, it's, you know, it's a clean slate, especially if you're a nihilist. You know, like, it leaves it open. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's all kinds of different punks, really, if you look at it. Punks like you, punks like me, whatever, you know, like.
right. It's like the same thing's happening in Christianity now. There's like not a left and a right, but there seems to be like not warring factions, but like people fighting for what Christianity in America specifically, and maybe white America is more specifically, means, in this warring faction of like the uber conservative right wing moral majority, like holding onto that versus a more progressive Christianity and trying to be like, Jesus said X, Y, and Z, like that. And it has less to do with punk rock and like music, but like this war, it's a similar spirit in Christianity, right?
Yeah. It's ideology. Yeah. And I mean, I know a lot of people don't agree with me because I and a lot of the stances that I take, I've always spoke out against police brutality. I've always spoke out against like discrimination, especially against people of African descent here. And people that are Christians and try to ignore that, I have a problem with that. That's you're basically siding with an enemy. You know, you're siding with the devil if you do that. You're ignoring people that are oppressed. You know, like that's my thing. I don't think that a person that ignores that, to be honest, is really looking at their faith, you know, like, and it's not a put down or anything. It's just reality, because that same person that will tell me, well, you know, you just got to rely on Jesus. But okay. What about like, you know, there's verses in the Bible that talks about like recompense and stuff like that, you know, like, and getting things right when it comes to, you know, people that are not doing so great. You know, especially with America, America has done a lot of things, you know, and in America, although there's great things in America, we have to recognize that there's a lot of bad things. And even when it comes to racism, that this country has a foundation of it. So, I mean, a lot of people disagree with me and I don't care. I don't. I'm telling you how I see it. I've seen things even in my childhood that I shouldn't see. My parents have seen things in their childhood that they shouldn't have seen, you know, or experienced. So, like, yeah, when we talk about, like, it's funny, you mentioned the conservative right. That's an idol to me. I'm not a leftist or right person. You know, like, to me, it's all the same system. I just know what I see and I know what I don't like. I know what I've experienced, and I know what even some Christians have had the nerve to tell me as a black person, you know, what to do, you know, in regards not only to my faith, but even to my race. It's like, dude, you're basically trying to ignore by putting a Christian band-aid on the situation. No, at least what God has taught me is like, we have to look at the world, ourselves, and the devil for what they are through his eyes and face it the way that you're supposed to. And if there's something wrong, it needs to be dealt with. It needs to, you know, be healed. Yeah. So that's, I don't know, when you mentioned that, that's, there's a lot of that alt-right bull crap going on in a lot of, you know, American Christianity. You know, I hate it. I hate that stuff. I'm totally against it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my youngest sister's African American, and I have like cousins who are African American and like best friends, and it's like a lot of just trying to listen to their experiences and just trying to like my it's not like my cousins are in a bad place. It's like, no, my cousin's like going to medical school and like had a good upbringing, but he's black and he's driving a Mercedes and he gets pulled over because he's black in a Mercedes, and there's nothing, because it's just like the system is stacked against him because of his skin color, and it has nothing to do with how he grew up or what he did. It's just like his skin color determines how people judge him, and it's terrible.
Yep. And people don't want to hear that. They think, why don't you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? Okay. What if our bootstraps were taken from us? You know, like, that's BS, dude. I don't even want to hear that. You're talking to a person that is a working class, you know, where people might consider me lower working class black person that comes from a working class family that has never been in trouble with the law. What are you talking about? And then at least blatantly getting ourselves in the trouble with the law. I've been harassed by cops. There's cops that have broken into my freaking house, dude. I've experienced that as a kid. I've been followed by cops, man. I've seen people that I know and love get beat up by cops, you know. My grandma's a freaking Bible, like Bible reading prayer warrior. She got drug out by the police. It's demonic, dude. People don't know. They want to always deny. And I've had white Christians deny that. Oh, you have had to have done something. No, you don't.
Yeah.
That was in the 60s. The 60s were not long ago. And I can tell you things that still mirror that stuff today. No, that's the problem that I have with a lot of people that are into this whole patriotic Christian thing, or right-wingers. And the left-wingers I have a problem with, too, because a lot of them will ignore certain things. They will ignore and skip over things that we are asked for. I'm one of those guys that believe in black reparations. You know, some people are against that. And I think, everyone else has gotten it. How come we can't get that? There's a lot of things when it comes to that even that could benefit a lot of us even today when it comes to us as a group, you know, that are not, you know, like when it comes to the wealth gap. That's, you know, in our group, it's very, very low, and that was systematically done. So that, you know, those reparations will help, you know, our group, like, kind of thrive better than we are. And a lot of us are working. You know, there's always these dumb narratives and stereotypes about us that really piss me off. And I've had to fight against them, you know. Even when we talk about subcultures, you know, like, it's one thing to be punk, but it's another thing when you're a black punk rocker too and going through the same stuff. Afropunk, the movie, if you've ever seen that, that movie dealt with some of that. You know? But yeah, man, it's a trip. The best thing that we could do is you know, fight for the real thing. And it's good that you're listening to your sister and not discounting what she goes through. Keep doing that and try to be as much of a, you know, justice producer as possible, like Neely Fuller would say, you know. It's a trip, man, you know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty upfront about, like, stuff like that, because there's a lot of cats that are, you know, they don't care. And then, we talk about narratives. I mean, we live in a country where we have a white supremacist shooters that pretty much do something, and then they blame Louis Farrakhan or Ilhan Omar for it. Like, really? You know, like, I'm not a Muslim. I'm not from the nation. I'm not even traditionally Muslim. But at the same time, we know that that's blatantly racist. You're using them as a scapegoat for your own disgusting activities and ideologies. You know what I'm saying? The media does that. There's a lot of stuff that I've seen and noticed how they get down, and how racism definitely is pervasive. So I call that stuff out, you know? Well, with music, it's you know, music influences the world. The musicians are usually the carriers, whether they're talking politically or not. You know, like, we tend to be people that are mostly influenced by pop culture, especially music. I realized that even at a young age, you know, like, and it's kind of even the reason that I think I fell into this music education thing. But even if I didn't do that, I recognize that music is one thing that unites a lot of people and brings people together. And it's the reason that we're talking on the phone right now. You know, like, music is social. You can't get away from that.
If like a dozen come down, I'm out the space hatch, aiding and abetting Russian rockets through the universe. If something doesn't give quick, I'm gonna get sick. I could sure use another friend about now.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.
I never felt so young and alive as when I'm diving into a tomb. And now I'm learning as I listen along, and the wheels are turning and I start